Hello, everybody. This is Jocelyn, and I have Dr. Maury with me today. Hi, Maury.
Hello.
Hi. Today, we're going to talk about feelings and how feelings come first. So in the world of a law of attraction and any kind of manifesting, we talk a lot about controlling your thoughts and getting yourself into a state, a mental state. And when you're in the mental state, you get into the state of feeling. And when you feel, because feeling is really the secret. And Neville Goddard talks a lot about that. As a matter of fact, he has a book called Feeling is the Secret. Feeling really is the secret to manifesting your desires. But something that we were just talking about, Dr. Maury and I were talking about before this podcast, was feelings come first. And most of the time, people think that thoughts come first. And that's actually inaccurate. So an example that I'd like to give is hiking on a trail, and all of a sudden you stop, dead stop, and you see this long, brown, knotted, woody, green-looking thing in the middle of the trail, and you catch your breath, your heart rate goes up, and all of a sudden you think, oh my God, it's a snake. And it's not a snake. It is a stick that resembles the look of a snake. Well, what happens is your senses, and I believe we said it was your sympathetic nervous system, picks up and it also is involving your brain, a pattern. And the pattern is trying to make sense of what's in the middle of the hiking trail. And you're thinking, oh my God, that could be a snake. And that sort of fear is actually meant to keep you safe. But instead, you know, you this happens and you go, oh my God, you jump back, you're a little bit out of breath, you're thinking, your mind's out of control, and you're scared. Realize that it's a snake, you carry on the trail. But you're still thinking about, that could have been a snake. What if it was a snake? What if this happened? What if the snake coiled and bit me? What if I didn't see it and I'd have stepped on it? Oh my God. And your mind is completely out of control because the brain and the body has released all these chemicals into your system. You're completely in a state of stress, and this can remain with you for 15 minutes and longer, depending on how long you continue to think about snake in the road and what could have happened. So a lot of people call Dr. Maury and I, and they say to us, you know, so we talked about this in our last podcast. This is the story of my life. Why does this always happen to me? Why does John always get the promotion? Why do my boyfriends leave me? Why do my wives always leave me? Why do my girlfriends cheat on me? Why do my parents hate me? Why do my friends never invite me to anything? And typically, it's because of what we're talking about. Feelings come first. And there is something that happens when we interact with other people that will generate a feeling that is actually a memory from something else. And before you know it, you are lock, stock, and barrel in that emotion. But those emotions are the things that then create the thoughts. And this podcast is meant to tell you and teach you that your thoughts control your emotions. And if we can become aware of what is happening to us in our body by the way that we're responding and being mindful, as Dr. Maury would say, about what we're feeling, we can stop and arrest the situation and begin to revise and change it. And so I'm going to ask you, Dr. Maury, when people are, for example, here's a really good one. A girl is at a store and she's been texting with her boyfriend. She's going to go into the store. She parks her car. She puts her phone in her purse and she goes and she does her thing. She checks her phone 45 minutes later. He hasn't texted her in 45 minutes. She texts him and she's like, hey. And she says whatever she says. She still doesn't hear from him. By the time she's done shopping, she's sitting in her car. He has not texted her. And whatever her past experiences have been that were negative, not positive, which I think is really interesting. And I want you to address why we go negative and not positive. And she thinks to herself, he's with his ex-girlfriend. He's cheating on me. He doesn't want to see me anymore. I knew the conversation that we had three nights ago was going to do this. I knew it. And she is in a state of absolute panic. She gets in her car. She drives over to his house. He's not home. And it gets worse. And about an hour later, he's like, hey, what's going on? And she's freaked out. Why didn't I hear from you? Where were you? What? And he's like, I told you I had swim class. We were training for 2.5 hours. And in the back of her mind, she's still thinking, was he? And she goes and looks at all of his social media. She talks to some of his friends. He was at swim training. Why do we always go negative and not positive? And why do we protect ourselves instead of coming from a place of, let's just give this a minute and be a little patient and see if he responds?
So the reason why we go negative first is because our body, our brain doesn't think. It responds, right? Our heart responds. Our lungs respond to stimuli. That's what happens. And so we have an area in our brain that is our thinking center, our prefrontal cortex. You know, that's where executive functioning and we can rational reason things away happens, right? But the problem is when I'm engaged in something, I'm triggered into something negative, I don't have the ability really to think it through. So I then go to the file cabinet of how do I protect myself? Because negative means danger, right? So negative means danger. Your brain and your body is there to protect itself from danger. And so that's why we naturally go to negative from a physiological standpoint. Now we can control that, but we have to be aware of that system and how the system works so that we know how to circumvent it when it occurs, right? So it's right. Much easier to think about something negative because one, I'm triggered into a negative thought. I'm in my hippocampus where my negative emotions live. All the things that ever happened to me that I'm supposed to protect myself from live. And that's the file cabinet I open. And I start saying, how do I protect myself from this latest danger? Even if it's emotional danger, it's still danger.
Okay.
So our job is to bring ourselves to awareness as we talk about mindfulness and things like that so that we can override this emotional tornado that's getting ready to happen if we stay there, right? So it's kind of like you said, feelings are first. So, you know, if it's a negative feeling, I'm going into the negative cabinet. If it's a positive feeling, I usually go to the positive cabinet. It's just that one's just harder to retrieve because it's not about protecting myself.
So is it easier for us to protect ourselves?
Absolutely, because it's natural. That's what we're supposed to do. Like, for instance, a panic attack is not real. You're not really dying, but it feels that way, right? It absolutely feels like you're going to die during a panic attack. People think they're having heart attacks. That's just what happens because they have this feeling of dread, whatever they're dreading. And then it starts sending signals, can't get my words out, signals down the central nervous system, right? And it says, hey, I'm not getting enough oxygen because this person is panicking, right? So then when the brain's not getting enough oxygen, it makes the heart beat faster. And then we have just a cycle of events or a series of events that end up with you either passing out or figuring out how to gain control over the panic. But it all started with a feeling of dread.
Got it. I think that I talk about it in a way where I will tell you that your senses deny you the truth and you have to deny your senses. And sometimes that helps, but an undisciplined mind relies upon the senses.
Right. Because that's not protection.
Yes. Because they're pre-programmed to respond to past events. And so what does your brain do? It organizes the sensory input. And that's what you're saying.
Right.
And so feelings come first. And I will tell you, in manifesting and in creating something, feeling is very important.
Sure.
And if you want your ex back, or if you want love in your life, people say, okay, then you have to be more loving. And if you want that promotion, then you have to be a little bit more congenial. You also have to work harder, right, than most people. You have to do what it takes to get these things. If you want friends, you have to be friendly. If you want love, you have to be loving.
Absolutely.
And what I see is there's a lot of barriers to people getting what they want because they're fearful. And so they think that they're going to say, you know, Jane is my new girlfriend. Jane is my new girlfriend. Jane is my, okay. So that isn't going to do anything for you if you are in a state of fear. And so we have to be able to address our feelings of fear and break those barriers, because I think that there's so many different things, right? You worry that you can't change, that you won't change, that you don't have the power to change, that you have too many faults. And the truth is that those are overriding what you're trying to create in your life. So if fear runs your life, you're staying comfortably uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
So,
you know, just like how you explained it, how I explained it to my clients is that feelings are good, right? They inform us of how important something really is. Really, it's the gauge of how much do I really care about this when I maybe don't really recognize that, I don't understand it, or I don't want to recognize it. But the feelings you cannot deny, they are there. Right.
So then you would say to someone that comes to see you, if you're not actually passionately taking an action towards and have the conviction to have the things that you want, you're really talking about them with no intention of having them.
Absolutely.
And so we have to get real with ourselves
Absolutely. So, you know, and I always say feelings are always valid. They're just not always accurate.
Yes.
Right? So you feel what you feel. We cannot deny that part. But then the accuracy is where you go into the cognitions. You start thinking about, is this true? So like, for instance, the example you used with the young lady and the boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Now she started feeling like, I've been here before. Last time I was here, this guy cheated. I feel like he's cheating. Right? Her feeling is valid because that's her experience. It has happened before. It's not made up. It's true. It's not true for this setting, but it's a true statement. So then she has to say, is this correct? Well, how does she find out if it's correct? Well, you know, sometimes, like you said, you got to do what it takes. If you want a loving relationship and you want a trusting relationship, then guess what? You have to be more trusting, right?
Mm-hmm. You've got to stop saying this always happens to me.
Right.
You have to stop.
You know, so what about this guy, not my experience, not my fear, but what about this guy tells me he's cheating? You know, him being gone for 2 hours is not it. Has he lied about something in the past? Has he cheated with his ex-girlfriend with another girlfriend? I mean, there has to be some facts to this feeling that you have in order to adhere to that feeling, make the feeling valid. But it's not valid just because you experienced it in the past.
And you have to actually control what you're saying to yourself.
Absolutely.
Because fear was meant to be a biological response, not a psychological response.
That's a very good statement. That's exactly true.
Right. And so we are deeply wired, right, from our evolution to protect ourselves from threats. But that's predators.
Right.
Right. And instead, what we find is a lot of people acting on, you know, they have stress hormones, as you know, running through their bodies, and they're stressed and they're anxious a lot about a lot of things. When actually what you can do is heal those things from your past so that you can approach things with a more calm, peaceful, clear mind and heart.
Absolutely.
Instead of us being in reaction mode. And this is where self-discovery and mindful awareness happens in layers, I think. I do not think that we are able to, and anybody that I've talked to, at least that is in your type of profession, and even the healing profession, it's a layered thing. And you can do a lot of work, and you're still going to find that you have more layers. Right?
Exactly.
I think it's constantly, we are always learning to understand ourselves and find out what we really want. And so I think that when we strip away the old patterns and the old habits and the old energies, and we become very cognizant of the feelings that we hold about situations, for example, love or not getting the promotion or not having any friends. What I usually find are people holding on to old resentments, and they're bitter and they're protecting themselves because they don't ever want to feel that kind of pain again.
Right.
And I'm big on forgiveness. You've heard me say this, and a lot of people are not going to like this statement, and that's okay. But when you say that you're going to forgive and forget, you need to forgive and forget. And I hear many people say, I forgive them, but I'm not going to forget it. And you keep repeating the same patterns because you will not forget and let go of the old response. So you're holding that biological response. And you actually bring that to you because your feelings are way more powerful than your thoughts. So feeling is much more powerful. And if you guys want some scientific data on it, I've written a blog on it. It's not in my head at the moment. Walt Whitman said something. He said, do I contradict myself? And he said, very well then. If I contradict myself, I'm large and I contain multitudes. And Walt Whitman was aware that he was human, and he was aware that he makes mistakes, and he is aware that he is larger than our mistakes and our contradictions and the things that we consider slights by other people, because he knew that we were also slighting ourselves when we don't forgive. And I know you have people come into your practice and they say, I get it. I have to forgive, and I forgave him, but I'm not going to forget. And they're alone and they're lonely. They never get promoted. And if they do, they're always having problems with other people. People don't have any friends. They want to know why their boyfriend and girlfriend or spouse are always breaking up, getting back together. And it is because we do not forgive others and we don't forgive ourselves. And so I wanted to know what you say to people who come to you and they say, I just can't. I won't. I will never forgive my ex for cheating on me.
And so, you know, we talk about the prison of unforgiveness, right? You get to be stuck wherever this person hurt you. I mean, whether they hurt you at 8 or 80, that's where you get to be stuck at. And that's a choice, and I'm okay with your choice. However, there is a process of, you know, forgiving. I don't use the word forget because that really does trigger people in my line of work. They get really upset. And I said, and relieving. Relieve the person of their duty to fix it, right?
Okay. So mm-hmm.
They're no longer responsible for fixing your hurt. It's now yours. So you get to fix it. So it is empowering. You get to fix this problem that this person gave you. It's a gift that keeps on giving, you know? And so many times once we get to that place and somebody understands what that means, they're like, oh, okay. So I'm relieving them of their responsibility for fixing my hurt. And when they hear themselves say, oh, it's my hurt. Oh, it's mine. It belongs to me. I'm like, yeah. Now, they gave it to you. Don't get me wrong. You're not responsible for it happening to you. You're just responsible for fixing it.
Right. When you were a kid, I mean, you know, people have all kinds of theories. You know, you chose your parents, you came here. We don't know
right. The
truth about any of that. But what we do know is what we experienced. And that we have to deal with. We have to look at that. And I say forgiveness, if you look at the word forgiving, it means spirit of generosity. So when we are forgiving someone, our spirit is free to feel differently instead of harboring resentment, jealousy, bitterness, and all these emotional and mental states that actually keep us locked, as you said, in the unforgiving prison. And so a generous spirit is one that gives love freely, and they're not even aware of it. It's a state of tolerance. It's a state of love. It's a state of acceptance, not necessarily of others, but of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more about self-love. And I want to talk a little bit on forgetting. I don't mean forgetting what happened to you so that you allow yourself to be a doormat.
Right.
I mean forgetting the train wreck hamster wheel that goes on in your mind
right.
that you hook into that ruins your life and tells you you're not good enough. That and creates your bitterness and your jealousy and your resentment. I would never tell somebody to blindly forget something.
Absolutely.
Because I think that there's benefits to understanding why something happened to us, why people, understanding, I think, is a really good word. When we can understand others and understand the motivation, or at least try to, it does help free us from the unforgiving prison. But I don't think that you blindly forget. I think that you forget your bitterness, your jealousy, your anxiety, right? We have to relinquish the thoughts and the feelings around that pain that we have been nursing for however long we've been holding on to it.
Right.
When someone is in the process of trying to say, okay, Dr. Mari, I get it. I've been really unforgiving. I can see the problems that I have by not attracting love and a new job because I'm always protecting myself. What are some of the steps that you go through with someone to help them forgive?
So, you know, I think forgiveness is truly a process, and it's not a linear one. So it's not a 1, 2, 3, you're done. Usually it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 3, 5, you know, it's one of those things, you kind of double back. So the way I like to describe it, and I actually have this diagram, I'm not a great drawer, but I still drew this diagram of this mountain. And if, you know, I'm not a mountain climber, but if you, you know, hike on any trails, the trail double backs on itself. It's like a snake going up the mountain, right? And so what I say is that when we're in this process of forgiveness, we're at the base of the mountain. And we can identify this tree as the base. You know, this is home base. We know we are coming back down to this back down this mountain to get to this tree if we ever get lost, right? And so as we start up the trail, we start analyzing what happened to me, like the complete story, not just the negative aspect of the story. Because usually there's not just this horrific incident that didn't have anything else to go with it. You know, the plane didn't fall out of the sky and just hit your house. There's a series of events that led up to whatever the hurt and pain was. And so we don't isolate just that hurt and pain and let it be this traumatic event, right? So we process through the entire set of circumstances, right? And again, I'm in a therapist mode, so I don't know if people do this on their own, but in my office, this is what we do. And as we process through this series of events, I want to know, how are you feeling? Emotionally, physically, I want to know all the senses. Like you said, do you smell anything? Do you see anything? What do those things mean to you? What else are they tied to? Right? So it might be, you know, I have a smell of apple pie when somebody, you know, violated me. But I also remember apple pie because my grandmother made apple pies all the time.
Layers. There's your onion.
Right. Yeah. And so then I stopped liking anything that has anything to do with apples at all, even though they had all this positiveness prior to the event. Does that make sense?
Totally.
And so as we start processing through, what are the senses that you have around this? And then we get to re-narrate the story, not change the story, but re-narrate it from a position of power. Okay. So because of this, how are we going to get back to I love apple pie? I love apples, and this one person's not going to rob me of that.
So do you think that the reason you use the word power, this is how we take our power back.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that we feel empowered or disempowered because of a specific event, and when we take our power back, people fight and they say, but I had no power. And that's where the victim, that's where I guess what I'm asking you, and it sounded all garbled up, was, is there a delineation for you to say to somebody, but you, here's how we're going to heal this. You're going to empower yourself.
You're going to empower yourself.
Even if you're going to overcome what you believed was disempowering you.
Right.
Okay, so, keep going.
Mm-hmm. So for instance, I mean, it's a great question, because a lot of people will say, well, I had no control. And I'm like, well, that's kind of the point. You had no control. So now that you do have control, what are you going to do with it? Now that you can do something about it, what are you going to do with it? It's why a lot of victims become advocates, right? So if I was victimized, I can't fix my victimhood, but I can definitely fix it for somebody else. And so that's where they get their power. I'm not saying everybody should become an advocate, but that's just one way of you taking your power back, not from the person, because that's what people get hung up on, from the pain. You take your power back from the pain, not the person.
So if we use the girl in the car with the boyfriend that didn't text her for 2.5 hours, for example, and she said to you, I'm ruining this relationship because I completely lost control. You would identify, you'd say, that's it.
Right.
You are completely out of control because you're not thinking, you're allowing your emotions to run the show. And that's where we have to use our, so I'm trying to tie this all together for our audience. And so this is where we talk about thoughts controlling our emotions, because thoughts are very useful in saying, hey, wait a second, is this really happening? Like you said, okay, so keep going. I'd like to hear what you say when, because you and I both hear a lot of, I really screwed up. I think he or she is gone forever. I think my boss is going to fire me. I just lost control and they weren't doing that at all, but I thought they were. What do I do?
So, you know, I think verbalizing things is the most powerful thing you can ever do in any relationship. Telling someone how you feel, not your fear, like we talked about at the beginning of this, but how you feel. I felt out of control when I didn't hear from you for 2 hours. And when I got out of control, I start doing things that are beyond what I wanted to do. And I'm sure this has probably scared you or it made you think differently of me, but I want you to know how and why this happened. And I also want to figure out a better way to handle this, right? So when we start verbalizing and telling somebody, hey, yeah, I screwed up, I missed it. People are really usually forgiving and give us a lot of grace. They really do. It's the thing that we're talking about with forgiveness. If the person who hurt me actually came and said they're sorry, a lot of times that fixes the pain. This is the situation, the pain. You acknowledge what you did to me, right? And now I can start the process. So all we're doing is, like you said, if you want more love, or if you want love, you have to be more loving. So if you want forgiveness, you have to be more forgiving of yourself with this other person. Saying, I screwed up. I did it wrong. And let me tell you why. Because I was out of control. And I really did pull from my tool belt of things that went wrong for me and started beating you over the head with them. Because that's what I'm used to. I'm not used to someone who is doing what they say they're going to do.
So we don't know how to respond or how to be.
Right.
And it's okay to say to somebody, I don't know how to do that. I'm learning.
Right.
But first is to recognize I was out of control.
Right.
And then being able to
forgive yourself, right?
Like, yeah. Yes.
I forgive myself because this is what I know.
And articulate that to the other person after. Yes. Yeah. That self-forgiveness is very important because it means that you're being softer on yourself.
Exactly.
And when you're soft and gentle on yourself, you're soft and gentle on others.
Right.
And that's when you can say, I blew it and I'm really sorry. And here's why. And it doesn't, it's not an excuse.
No.
It's your truth.
You really are sorry that you lost control. You really are sorry. And so this is kind of humorous, but it works everywhere. So I have a lead foot. Yeah, I like driving fast. You know, I should have been a race car driver. And occasionally,
an
officer will pull me over because I didn't see them. Because if I see them, I slow down, right? And I didn't see them. And they'll say, ma'am, do you know why I'm pulling you over? And I say, yes, officer, I was going 90 in a 75. That's, 15 miles over the speed limit. And, you know, really, if I would have saw you, I would have slowed down. But I get in this driving mode and I just start driving fast. And usually they are completely shocked by my admission. They look at me like, did you really just admit that you were driving 15 miles an hour over the speed limit? And I just say yes. And I'm like, here's my registration. Here's my license. And I mean, 9 times out of 10, I've only gotten one ticket that I can remember in the last 10 years. I've been pulled over a lot of times, but this is one ticket. And they usually say, I'm going to run your tags, I'll run your license. And if everything comes out clean, I'm going to let you go. But I need you to slow down.
I've had the same thing happen when I'd say, I know exactly what I was doing.
I know exactly what I did because I did it. I mean, there's no reason for me to, well, this, that, or another. It is my truth. I'm speaking my truth. And guess what? They respect the fact that I spoke my truth. Now, that doesn't mean go out there and speeding, just tell the truth and you get off. I mean, I realize and I'm prepared to take the consequences of my actions, but there's just something powerful in speaking truth.
I have told people before on several occasions, you know, when I have messed up, when I haven't seen them for who they are, and I've apologized for that and said, you know, this is what I wanted, this is what I needed. And it has set me free.
Absolutely.
And softened the way that I felt so that I could be more forgiving with myself, so that I could be more forgiving with them.
Exactly.
Because the forgiveness and the softness actually heals our relationships all across the board.
Absolutely.
Parents, kids, coworkers, bosses, work environment, lovers, spouses, friends, everything.
Right.
And so it's choosing faith over fear.
Absolutely.
And it's choosing forgiveness after we have expressed the fear and then making the decision, I'm going to do this differently. No matter what I see, I'm going to do this differently. Even if you wind up being wrong.
Even if
because it's teaching you. Yeah, it teaches you something about yourself. That you can control your emotions. And when you can control your emotions with your thoughts, you actually stop attracting to yourself the people that cheat on you, mm-hmm. the people that can't tell you the truth because you've got a quick trigger, the bosses that are like, oh my God, just stay away from her. And the coworkers that, you know, give you a wide berth, or the spouse that doesn't speak their truth, or the lover that doesn't speak their truth because they can't deal with your emotional reactions.
Right.
Your emotional reactions don't actually help you. They alienate people from you.
Absolutely. That's so true.
And so I think that we have to begin to pay attention to, basically, we talked about fear, faith, and forgiveness today. And again, I go back to forgiveness is a spirit of being generous. Generous with yourself and generous, I think, with others. It doesn't mean you let people walk on you.
Right, not at all.
But I like that people can understand if feeling comes first and you have to understand how our biological mechanism works, which is really interesting. You have to get really quiet through mindfulness and practice. When you ask yourself, when you're in a situation having a conversation with somebody and you want to react, this person just insulted me. Did they just insult me? Oh my, you stopped hearing what they had to say. And instead you go, okay, wait, what is this person trying to say? And you can remain very calm and you can say, did you just say this to me? Is that what you meant to say to me?
Right.
And let them respond and begin to have a conversation. And if they did, you can walk away. You don't have to be involved in a conversation like that, but you don't have to attack them either. And you don't have to feel badly about yourself. You literally say to yourself, I don't engage in things like this. And you walk away. And that's how thought controls feeling. And that's how we remain in control. So that we're not feeling offended, insulted, and all the other things that we feel by perceived slights and hurts.
Exactly.
And I think that that's how we discipline our mind. An organized mind is a disciplined mind. And I think that when we begin to discipline our mind and organize our thoughts and pay attention to what we're feeling, and use those thoughts to, as you said, you use a different word. I call revise, right?
Right.
Or reframe. You call it reframing. What you think is happening. You empower yourself.
That's exactly.
And it is a practice. I know. I practice it.
And that's what I think really have to understand. Yeah. If you have to practice this thing, you know, called life as princess. You know, you have to practice. You have to practice how to handle your emotions. You have to practice saying sorry to people. You have to practice forgiving people. It's continual. It's not this one and done. I've made it. I mean, I'm a therapist. I've been a therapist for 18 years, and I still have to practice these things. And it's one of those things. If you don't use it, you will lose it, and you have to start over.
You have to begin within. If you begin with yourself and you're gentle with yourself and you forgive yourself, you will be gentle and forgiving with others.
Absolutely.
So I think that's what I have learned is if I'm really hard on myself, I'm really hard on others.
Right.
If I'm more gentle and compassionate with myself, I am more compassionate and gentle with others.
Absolutely.
And we stop hiding and because that's one of the things I think that we wind up doing is we want to run away and we want to hide because we're embarrassed or ashamed or whatever it is that we're feeling. And when we stop those kinds of feelings, and you are stopping feelings, you remain more in control of what's happening in your life. Your life goes more smoothly. So anyway, I feel good about this. Do you have anything else to say?
I think we're a little bit biased, but it was pretty powerful.
We're biased?
Just a
really?
Little bit. Just a little bit.
Why? Tell me.
No, I mean, this is a topic I love. So of course I think,
Me too.
I think it's great. I think it's powerful when people get this, you know, when they understand it, they really do have control over themselves and the universe responds to that versus them responding to what the universe has given them. I just think it's a really powerful position to be in.
I do too. I think it's very self-empowering. I think those are very important things to practice instead of practicing the resentment and the angers and the jealousies and the gossips and, you know, all of those things that those negative things that are so easy to go to that actually make us really bent and crooked and cripple us.
Right. So that's what I mean by
this
bias.
Is definitely,
bias on the subject.
Yeah, definitely. It's really how to live our life in a way that's positive and makes it a better place for everybody, not just us. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us. And I hope you got something out of this. And just remember, faith, forgiveness will overcome your fear. Have a great day. All participants of the Jocelyn Live podcast have been thoroughly vetted and agree to discuss personal information on this podcast. Each participant is offered a referral to therapy if needed. No information given should be considered medical or mental treatment or advice. Thank you all for joining us. If you're interested in joining our podcast or you would like to participate in a podcast, please email info@jocelynlive.com.